Welcome to Share the Best, the podcast of Top Employers Institute. My name is Patrick Randall and I'm the regional manager of Central Europe at Top Employers Institute. And in this podcast, I'm talking to our top employers about their world of work. Today, my guest is Andreea Tomović, country president and general manager of Novartis Bulgaria. Thank you for being here, Andreea.
Sure. Thanks, Patrick. Great to be here.
And for all of you who don't know Andreea yet, he is, like I mentioned, the country president of Bulgaria. And if one thing sticks to me with conversations or from conversations I had with him is that he always mentioned that pharma business is first of all a people business. And I think that's something that will come back through our conversation today. But I think it gives a nice overview of what you how you see yourself in the business as a country manager. You have over 15 years of experience, and you say that for you, people skills are not hard skills, which I also like. So we always talk about soft skills when it comes to people, but for you, it's really, really critical and relevant. And another thing I liked very much is that you said leadership is a lifelong journey about engaging both the hearts and the minds. And again, something that I guess could also be used for a mathematic guy that you are and in the position where you bring together business and people. But Andreea, maybe before we go into the topic, maybe a quick introduction from your side. How did you get to where you are and how did you get into this podcast today?
Sure. No, thanks a lot. As you said, I have been working for Novartis for a long time. Actually, I started as an undergraduate student. I was a student of mathematics at the time when I joined Novartis as an intern. And I started my career in research, in development. So I spent really several years doing also my PhD in bioinformatics at Novartis in basic research. And then I was moving to the clinical development, then investor relations, then in strategy department, marketing as well, and then leading business first for the local Swiss market in hematology and now in Bulgaria for almost 4 years. And I have been collaborating with Top Employer Institute, I believe, for about three, four years now, and happy to be on this call together with you today, and looking forward to the conversation ahead of us.
Thank you, Andreea. And you're based in Bulgaria. Have you always been based there, or what was your kind of your international journey until now?
Yeah, no, I started my career actually in Basel. There is Novartis headquarters. I spent most of my professional time there. Then I was for several years in Origio, in the little place near Milan, where was at that time our headquarters for Oncology Region Europe. Then I was back in Switzerland, but this time in Rotkreuz, where is our local business CPO, how we call it. And then now 3-4 years I'm in Bulgaria. So across three countries I have been living. Originally I'm from ex-Yugoslavia, also diversified and multi-ethnic background. I was born in Serbia. Yes.
Right. Okay. So you bring back something that is also very, very characteristic for our top employers community, people who are listening to this call. And what would be great for them to also put what comes next into perspective. If you could give us a brief introduction to Novartis, and obviously people know the name, but I think to put kind of the best practices, the things we share, in a bit better and brighter light. If you could give us a quick overview of what Novartis is doing and how you are with your business fitting into that picture.
Sure. Novartis is a global international company. We are producing innovative therapies, highly specialty area in oncology, hematology, cardiology, neuroscience, immunology as well. We have a very rich pipeline of the new medicines, different technologies, and we are really aiming to touch human lives and to bring, as we like to say, more years to life and more life to years. That's kind of our purpose here locally in Bulgaria, and internationally it's about reimagining medicine and bringing more years to life and more life to years as well, just differently said, so to say. Touching human lives, let's say, simply.
Yeah. All right. It's looking at human lives and looking at people. Our topic today is bridging HR and business, how people, leadership and culture drive performance. And when I think about that, I think it's something that at the moment is really much discussed when it comes to the current challenging economic circumstances, where a lot of do you say, ways of working are readjusted, or where it's looked again, okay, so we see it with a couple of our top employers when it comes to working from home, to the human-centric approach that we also have in our organization. And so when I looked at the title first, I was thinking, okay, here we go. We look at HR again when it comes to kind of focusing on performance. But then when we go deeper in the topic, and I see people strategy is business strategy, I see that for you, people first is much deeper than kind of a current economic kind of reaction to what we have to do as HR, right? So if we could start there for you, if you could give a bit more light on why people are really at the core of what your business and your role make successful.
So I really believe all businesses are people businesses. Every business is fundamentally built on people. And before we are in the pharma sector, we are essentially in the people business. If people don't feel safe, valued, and clear on what matters, performance becomes fragile. But when they do, they create energy, accountability, and results that last. In the pharma sector, it's very popular nowadays to say that all pharmaceutical companies are patient-centric. And mm-hmm. How can be patient or customer-centric if we are not before people-centric? You know that associates working for that organization is also to love that organization if we would like to be loved by our customers and ultimately by our patients as well. So that's why I really believe before in any sector, we are in the people business.
Where does it come from, this very strong belief that I feel in every conversation I have with you? Where do you see that being grown inside you? Where did you figure that out as a leader?
So I was professionally, I've been growing up as a leader at Novartis, and I've been shaped really by giants in the pharmaceutical industry. I had opportunity to work really with extraordinary leaders that have been actually fostering that people first thinking within Novartis and then shaping me professionally. And leadership, when leadership quality and engagement go up, execution gets faster, collaboration improves, and customers feel it. And it is really shown in launches, in how we solve access challenges and resilience during the tough cycles. So people first thinking is the main pillar of the culture at Novartis, I would say. And culture is not a poster, it's a really performance system.
You get to already mentioned that being people-centric and having that people focus is really generating success from a business perspective. And I said it in the beginning very quickly, but you are indeed not the HR director of Novartis Bulgaria. You are the country manager, the general manager, country president of that market. So how would you say that kind of HR is the core of that role? Because I think normally everyone would say, okay, general manager, you have your HR director person who's then taking the lead for the people side. But how has that grown into your responsibility?
I treat really HR as a strategic partner. For me, it's not a support function. We plan the year and the strategic cycles, if you will, together. Capabilities that we need to develop, leadership behaviors we expect, critical roles, succession planning, internal mobility, and development priorities. So we really track people data with the same seriousness as business KPIs, because it really predicts the performance. And I must say that leaders generally see talents and culture as a business drivers, because they stop delegating culture to HR. They own it. They role model the behavior, make consistent decision, invest in capabilities. And when that happens, you don't need more control. You get more ownership and you really see the culture driving performance.
Yeah. Can you explain how that works in practice? Because I think if, and just maybe to give you and the listeners the context here, obviously, when we look at who is listening to this podcast, that's many different levels, many different size of organizations. So we always try to translate what is kind of thinking, what's theory into practice. So if we just stick with that thought, culture as a driver of performance and leadership as a shaper of that culture, how would you say does that work? How does that impact via culture on performance work from leadership?
Sure. As I said, the leaders at Novartis, they are not delegating culture to HR. They really own it. Mm-hmm. And they role model the behavior and make consistent decision that is then amplified through the people broadly. And the culture is actually created usually in small micro moments. This is usually how or what associates experience on, let's say, Tuesday afternoon, how we run meetings, how we handle conflicts, how we give feedback to each other, what we reward, and what we tolerate. And people just do not follow slogans. They follow what leaders consistently do. So for us, it's very important that leaders are matching their actions with the words, that it corresponds to each other, and that it is cultural commitments are experienced in a real life. Yes, we do measure them as well, but real life impact and real life experience evidence is much more important as well.
Is it something you can train? Because I can imagine that no leader, not you, me, or anyone who's listening, is born this way. So you get into that culture, you feel the connect most likely, because that's kind of what's happening through being with an organization over the years. But how do you, as a leader of those leaders, make sure that this continues to happen and that it also changes with the need of the organization, of the society?
I think first, everyone can be a leader. Leader is not a skill that is inherited. Leadership can be learned and trained. It is important to have open minds and hearts to constantly learn. Learning propensity is what really matters when it comes to the leadership. It's a journey that, and we consider ourselves students of leadership, and that journey never stops. So we keep increasing our awareness, self-awareness, awareness of others, and we keep learning, building new skills, getting out of the comfort zone. And one thing that for us, leadership at Novartis has two jobs: to paint reality and give hope. Reality is what is true, what is hard, what must change, while belief or hope is the confidence and meaning that we can do it together. So it's really about touching minds, brains, and hearts simultaneously and going together.
Yeah, I really like that, painting reality and giving hope. I think that's very beautifully said. If you take this very practically to your role with your direct reports, to stay kind of in the wording, how do you enable them in these times of huge change, of big challenges, to continue to give that hope? Because I think painting the reality is indeed something that, if you are kind of receptive enough, and you have the colors to paint that picture, you can. But giving hope is something that you really have to feel. Yes. How do you enable people to do that?
Absolutely. It's about behaviors that we set, that set the tone at Novartis. It's about clarity, about courage, and about care. Clarity is that we are clear on priorities, on the roles, what good looks like. Clarity reduces the noise in the world. We cannot stop talking nowadays. There are a lot of information around us. So it's very important that we are mastering the skills of simplifying complexity and bringing clarity internally. Then the second is, as I said, courage. We speak up early and address the issue directly and make decision even when it's uncomfortable. So the idea is to get and to feel comfortable with uncomfortable situations, if you will. So, and courage can be also trained on a daily basis with a little exercise. This is also very important. This is the muscle that we try to train and to learn every day with different micro situations. And finally, it's all about caring. We respect people, we invest in their growth, and create psychological safety so that people can bring their best as often as possible on a daily basis. And when leaders role models those three behavioral sets, then trust rises and performance follows. I'm absolutely sure. We actually empirically validated that
concept. I wanted to say, I would agree 100% with you. And I think that's something just that very unfortunately, in times of kind of tough weather outside, is often forgotten, right? That it is that trust that you destroy once you take away the enablement of people to make their own decisions, to have courage, to feel the freedom to take those decisions. and be a bit of an entrepreneur as well. You mentioned in just connecting that there in the conversation we had in advance that when you think about developing people, it's giving them the courage to embrace growth. What do you mean there? So how is the courage connected to a growth mindset that you want to have your people develop?
I usually quote Gini Rometty here: growth and comfort do not coexist. So it's really important to get out of the comfort zone. And I had luck at Novartis really and opportunities to change different functions, department, markets. I mean, I used to work, as I said at the beginning, in research literally, then in clinical development, then investor relations. And all those transitions were requiring a lot of courage, if you will, to step out of the comfort zone, to experience something new, and to constantly learn. And I really believe it's not about credentials. When I was younger, I have to admit I was suffering of the imposter syndrome. I was thinking always that degrees and credentials are my shields and that they are protecting me. So when I was in research, I thought I have to do PhD. Then when I was investor relations, I was doing my finance and MBA degree. And I always thinking, this is my shield. This is how I will make sure that I'm successful in the new role. But actually, at certain point, I had so to say epiphany moment when I realized it's not about credentials and degrees. It's about this learning propensity and figuring out what to learn. And this is actually when I realized this was my superpower of being able to constantly learn and to figure out what to learn. It's not about skills, credentials. It's not about degrees, actually. It's all about learning constantly because the knowledge nowadays, skills get outdated very quickly. And you need to learn constantly new one. And that's why the learning propensity mindset is extremely, extremely important. And I believe this at Novartis globally, we have been experiencing that, all of us. And I am proudly implementing that also at Novartis in Bulgaria as well. And that's how it goes.
Yeah, if you think about that implementation, because you talk about your epiphany moment, is there a way how we can create those? Because I also completely echo what you say when it comes to, let's say, my own past. You go to university, do bachelor, do a master, and then you think, okay, am I doing that PhD or not? And then you go into the job and you think, master was quite good to have it, but you're living through your work life, and you start feeling that it's not about that title. But when people come from university, they are also taught that this is the ranks. This is where you have to kind of climb up. And the same is living in the corporate world, right? The manager, director, senior director, vice president. That there's also those little achievements where you could say, is that something to strive for, or should you not focus on that and then kind of set your focus on how you actually perform, what you actually develop, what you actually learn.
Yeah. No, I really believe learning propensity is much, much more important than any credential and skills. Actually, what has been happening to me personally, that sometimes you hired an expert who is really established for credentials, experience, name it, and then very often that expertise out of dynamic in the world get outdated. And then with a difficult mindset that this expert is having and being recognized by his expertise, you have two problems. You have a problem that expertise is outdated, and then you have expert who is not easy to unlearn or willing to let it go, that outdated knowledge or skills. You know what I mean? Because you're their personality by telling them to discard the expertise for which they are already recognized. So that's why for us and for me personally, and what your institute is also promoting, is about skill-based hiring. It's about learning propensity. It's about mindset that is constantly looking for a new knowledge, and that's what matters much more. And I call it hard soft skills, you know, this mindset, because it's very difficult to numerically express it. But it's extremely important. Usually called soft, but it's underestimation. And that's why I'm adding these hard soft skills in terms of the people skills, mindset, learning propensity, much more relevant than any credentials or hard experiences as well.
Can you share a trick on how to still see that on a CV or in a first interview?
Yeah.
Because I guess that's the thing a bit with CVs, right? And that's why everyone is like, also with when it now comes to kind of AI supported talent acquisition and understanding who should go to the next round. What's Andrea's trick to figure that out as soon as possible?
Yeah, it's about asking smart questions and ask, for example, candidates what they have learned recently, and then they tell you, and then you go deeper and deeper and trying to get very specific things that they learn on a weekly, monthly basis. It has to be something very recent, you know, that they are learning constantly. You want to see the proven evidence of that learning propensity. Also, willingness to step out of the comfort zone, trying to do something new, either through the changing careers, changing the functions, changing the markets, doing something new. This is giving you as early signs of encouragement that the candidate is with open mind and heart and willing to learn more. And then you just probe with the discussion and questions, and you see how the person is accepting the questions, in which direction is going. If people, I believe we can always learn something even during the small conversation and small discussions, interviews. And then you see if people are reflecting already what they are listening during the small conversation, if it is all already getting absorbed by them. And that's how you actually apply tricks in recognizing this learning propensity.
Thank you. So I've learned something today. I will use it in my next interview round. Absolutely. One final topic you mentioned, and that's quite interesting, was about compassion and courageous leadership. So when it comes to why is compassion that you mentioned, what do you mean with that? How is that defined in your perspective?
Yeah, it means caring deeply and still doing what needs to be done. It's really not about being nice. It is all about being fair, honest, and respectful, and especially when decisions are hard. Wise compassion protects dignity and performance at the same time. It actually enables us to do hard things in human way. That's how I would define.
You also think it was somewhere in my notes that clear is kind and unclear is unkind. And I think that's something that is very underestimated as a leader, where you think you kind of cozy someone into a not really clear, but okay, let's move forward situation, when being clear about business outlook, being clear with numbers, just having kind of transparent sharing of dashboard, of data is something that gives much more peace of mind than unclarity does. How is that implemented? How do you use that in your daily job?
I mean, that quote is coming from the expert Brené Brown. I think she mentioned that for the first time in her books, that clear is kind. And the clarity is actually respect. And then empathy is connection. And together, clarity and empathy create trust. And trust in organization is extremely important for building relationship, for building sustainable and scalable business. And when you do that, it is essential for performance, not just for well-being of people, because trust is performance multiplier. When people feel safe, they speak up early, collaborate better, and take ownership. And compassion without courage becomes avoidance. Courage without compassion becomes fear. And the winning formula is actually both. This is what Brené Brown has been teaching us in her amazing books. And I must say that I have been a scholar and following up that wisdom for a while now in my leadership roles as well.
I think I have to do a bit of reading up to do there because, yeah, it absolutely resonates with also how we see leadership when it comes to, you mentioned top employers, like the way we assess those areas in your organization or in other organizations as well.
And maybe, Patrick, before you go to the next question, one practical example that I really want to say, and I was not paid by YouTube for saying that. I really mean that, that it is actually what is helping me at Novartis Bulgaria to build those people strategy and standards is really Top Employer Institute survey and benchmark. And with survey that we have been doing with you and your team now for almost more than 3 years, we are really checking if we have all key people aspects properly addressed. And not only what we think that we do, but we are actually getting external benchmarks, either in our industry, in our markets, but also outside of our industry and our markets. And you're helping us in figuring out the best practices from other companies. And that's why Top Employer recognition for us is not just a certificate or badge. It really helps us to improve our people strategy. And this is what I value working with you and your team. Sometimes it's very exhausting to answer more questions, but we really learn a lot. And this is how we are also fine-tuning and improving our people strategy. So thanks for helping us.
You're happy to be that partner as well, because I think it is also from our side where when we see that it's taken seriously and that actually it's not about just kind of getting towards the certification, it's where the true value lies. And yes, you talked about exhaustion, but earlier you mentioned that it's also about getting outside of your comfort zone when you truly learn. So I guess we are doing a very good job putting you out of that comfort zone once a year and hopefully for many, many years to come. To bring it all together, because we... Like I said in the very beginning, it's kind of the talk of town is about performance, it's about business, about impact. We look in our results, we're also trying to make the connection more clear to see what practices have an impact through culture on business performance. If you take everything we have discussed, how does this in your world and in your view come together as an impact for business performance of your organization, Novartis in Bulgaria?
Sure. We connect purpose to priorities, priorities to behaviors, behaviors to habit. We measure, we coach, we learn. When leadership is strong and culture is healthy, execution really becomes simpler. And I really believe leadership drives culture and culture drives performance. This concept we have been empirically validating with our data, and you are helping as well with your surveys to bring the data on that for 2-3 years now. And I have mathematical, statistical evidence that it works in real life. You just need to stay committed to cultural priorities, even in a tough periods, you know, and that you don't let it go out of your agenda in the crisis moments or when you don't have enough resources. You need to prioritize that. And especially in the crisis moment, you need to keep investing in people, in culture, and in those hard soft topics, as I like to say.
So if I'm an HR director listening to you being general manager, and I'm like, but that sounds a bit different from the story I hear from my general manager, who's looking at getting his input from the CFO, getting his input from shareholders. What's your tip to that HRD that is struggling to push his or her general manager a bit more into your mindset direction? How can that, which is definitely a transformation, but how can we from HR convince you that this is the right call?
You know, in the business and the finance people, we like to measure the KPIs and the impact. So you simply try to collect the data that are outcomes and the impacts made by initiatives that we are learning together at your institute, for example. And you need to be patient and to keep investing in those people and cultural initiatives to measure their impact and to connect the dots. And then with the time, if you have sufficient time frame, you will see that they correlate and they are causality, not only correlation among them. And then when you come to the general manager, business people who are more, let's say, analytical oriented and wants to see KPIs, you can bring them to them to that as well. So then you can connect hard soft topics with the KPIs, with the finance, with the business measures, and put the story numerically, qualitatively, and quantitatively. And then you will have credibility among the people who are usually skeptical around that. And then if you really see the companies that are the best from the cultural point of view, not only that they have the highest score on the cultural scores, they have also the best financial results. And if they're a public company, their stock performance also is doing much better over the time, because this is the intrinsic value. This is the true assets, because the patent of our medicine is getting expired. But when you have a people talents, they create new patents, new medicine, and this is sustainable way of scaling and succeeding in long term in stakeholder capitalism, I would say.
Thank you very much, Andrea. Sure. I think that that is a very good ending of our content part, let's say. Thanks a lot. Before we move on to our more informal section, is there anything else you want to add speaking to your fellow HR leaders for now?
I think it's just to stop treat people topics as HR initiatives, build them into governance, metrics, leadership expectations, capability building, accountability, measure it, discuss it, act on it, work together with your institute, Patrick, learn, help us, help all partners around the world to evolve those activities and to interpret the metrics that we have been measuring and how to connect them with business topics and finance topics even more directly. And then it will all go into one story and be even more convincing that this is the way to go.
Thank you. I think that everyone listening now, write that down and make sure you take those notes with you to your next next board meeting that you are presenting to. Andrea, thanks again. It was very inspiring. As you know, we always end the podcast with a quick question, quick answer section. So get ready for some quick questions. I have one I wrote down while we had the podcast because you inspired me to add that question. And that is, what have you learned this week?
Yes, that's a very good one. What I have learned this week is how to actually make sure that I find time to recharge and to make sure that I prioritize time to rest, you know, especially now when end of the year is extremely crazy busy. My manager was just asking me if I'm prioritizing this element as well in the next couple of weeks, because in order to be able to be compassionate to others and to take care of others, I need to take care of myself as well. And I was reminded, and I was a little bit reflecting on that, that prioritizing calm time, recharging time is extremely, extremely important, especially in the end of the year craziness we are all feeling and experiencing.
Absolutely. So that very well connects to the second question. And that if you and me are on an island and you could pack three things, what would you bring next to the book we just talked about to that island?
Yeah, I mean, I will probably, if possible, I would probably bring AI tools, if possible, to connect them remotely, because I'm a big lover of the new technologies of AIs, and especially having different dialogues with ChatGPT or any other AI agent, because it's train you how to ask questions, how to ask smart questions, and how to learn more about yourself, about the rest of the world, and even this hallucination and confabulation that happens around AI tools are also the source of creativity and innovation. So AI for sure, and some kind of connections. I love to be surrounded by people, and if you are alone, at least to have opportunity to connect with people remotely, this would be also another tool that I would like to have with me.
Makes sense. Yeah, and interesting that you mentioned kind of the chat functionality of ChatGPT, kind of to ask questions to see how they land and to be coached. It's also one of the aspects that we have captured in the report on AI-powered leadership, that leaders can actually really much leverage to prepare those. You mentioned critical moments. I always kind of call them moments that matter, to have like someone who's kind of responding first before you go out in the field. And then, yeah, you can't really try it out. It's just going to be that moment that matters. And then I have two more questions. One is, what advice would you give your former self? So when you left university, what would you say to that person today?
Yeah, sure. I would say to be more courageous and to believe in the learning propensity much more. I mean, when I was younger, I was really, as I said, openly admitting, suffering from imposter syndrome. I was always thinking that I need first to train myself, to earn credentials, certain skills, and then to go into unknowns. While actually, a couple of years later, I realized it's not degrees, it's not credentials, it's a learning mindset and propensity that will keep, enabling me to thrive and to courageously step out of the comfort zone. So I would for sure do that earlier and be more courageous and even more, developing then as a leader, my team as well, and empowering them. The people development is extremely, extremely important, and it has to happen as early as possible in order to empower, and as we like to say at Novartis, unboss them.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, that's true. So the last one, sticking with Novartis, why is Novartis your personal top employer?
Yeah, for me at Novartis, we really have the culture that it is about learning and it's about people. At Novartis, we have the couple of important values like inspired, curious, unboss, and integrity, where unboss means leaders do not control everything. We give direction and context and then trust people to take ownership. Inclusion for us is practical. Who speaks, who is heard, and how safe it feels to disagree. And finally, we hold ourselves accountable. We take smart risks, learn fast, we make each other extraordinary while holding ourselves and others to high standards. This is what Novartis globally is standing for, and I'm really proud to say that Novartis Bulgaria, we have been implementing and following those values very thoroughly and closely.
Thank you, Andrea. Thanks for those quick answers on the quick questions. We are at the end of our podcast already, so I want to thank you again. And as always, at the end of the podcast, you have a moment for a final statement, a final sentence you want to send away our listeners on this day.
If you're scaling globally, treat culture and human potential as a core business strategy, not HR support. Build leaders who are clear and kind, and create an environment where people keep learning, speak up early, and do their best work. Because leadership drives culture, and culture drives performance.
Nothing to be added here. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you for those wise words of leadership today. I'm very happy that you managed to be here in the podcast with me in your what I still think is a unique position as a general manager, as a country president, but taking people first, really, to your core and to your heart. And I'm happy that we all could learn from you today with some tips and tricks. So thanks again to you. Thanks to everyone who listened today to this podcast of Share the Best, the podcast from Top Employers Institute. And have a good rest of your day wherever you're listening to us today. Bye-bye.
Thank you.